Chairman, first of all, we appreciate the chance to connect here. Always great to have some time here in D.C. with you. Let's visit as we get into this farm bill discussion we were talking about. You've got a lot of new faces on that committee, a lot of new faces in Congress that have never been through a farm bill. I think like 40% that weren't here 4 years ago. How do you maneuver through that process?
Well, Don, maybe a little higher than that. I think over 200 members have not been through a farm bill or debated a farm bill or voted on a farm bill. Well, member education, that's how we do it. I started that as ranking member. Now, as ranking member, I really only have really direct influence over Republican members in my conference. But I'm looking forward to expanding that to all members. When you come into Congress, one of the biggest perils is you don't know what you don't know. And there are a lot of misinformation when it comes to various parts of the farm bill, whether that would be crop insurance or sugar policy. There's a decent list there. And that's really important that we lean in and educate and provide people the facts. And that's something I'm committed to doing.
So, timeline, you've been talking about you want this thing done by the end of September.
Well, there only are three options. We let it expire, and that's not an option because that'll hurt every American farm family and every American family and many outside this country who rely on our country for their food. We can do an extension. That's always a tool if we have to, but that's, doing an extension is not what I prefer. I want to get our job done, and that means that we hustle, we pick up the momentum here. We are behind for various reasons, I'm so confident if we all lean in this together and we do this in a bipartisan way, in a bicameral way, we can get this done before it expires the end of September.
Margins are extremely thin in both chambers. How do you get any important piece of legislation across the finish line?
I actually find that we've got great precedent where thinner margins help us be more effective, make us be more realistic. It kind of sidelines perhaps amendments and points of discussion that are just unreasonable and unattainable. And so I'm optimistic that we can take this. We're going to, it is on the committee itself, there'll be 28 Republicans and I believe 24 Democrats, which is about the average ratio difference. But I think especially on the farm bill, which is always in the final part of the farm bill, no matter what happens along the way, it's always bipartisan. This is a bill that's probably the most important bill for people that eat. Oh, that would be every American that rely on access to fiber, building materials, and energy resources. Oh, that would be every American. I think it has the right ingredients to be a good bipartisan bill. It may be the only really large let's put it this way. It's certainly the best prospect for a good bipartisan bill in the 118th Congress.
There's always areas that get in the crosshairs. Sugar and dairy are a couple of them that have in the past, maybe not so much the last go-around. But sugar, how do you see that the lay of the land there?
Well, I think lots of education will go a long ways. Our sugar industry is a net importer. I mean, it's one of despite the fact we've got good sound policy that I like because it protects American farm families, the sweet beef part of it is well over 50% of the sugar we consume. The sugar industry is family owned, and people are surprised when I hear that, when I say that, and they hear it. It is about education. And educating both the members and their staff. The 2018 Farm Bill, someone did try to amend the sugar policy, which is just, I don't understand those efforts. But I will say that amendment was defeated soundly. And my goal, I'm not naive enough to think that somebody's not going to introduce an amendment to go after sugar policy in this country. My goal is just to crush that amendment through member education ahead of time.
What about on dairy? Do you see federal marketing order reform? Is that part of the farm bill discussion?
Well, we absolutely have to look at it. There's no doubt about it. You can't keep doing what you've always done and expect different results. And we've been bleeding dairy farms, which is really sad. I tell people that in my veins flows milk with sawdust in it. You know, my family, a long line of dairy farmers, and, you know, I got the finest hardwoods in the world in my congressional district. And dairy policy, you know, we need to be looking at everything. I think the dairy margin coverage has worked really well, and that's good. Although we're in a fact-finding phase here, right, with hearings and regional listening sessions of getting input on that. But we do need to be looking at the federal milk marketing orders, whether that's something we do legislatively or something USDA does hearings. I mean, that's part of the discussions I'm hearing today. But I know it needs to change. It needs to improve. Because if we continue to do what we've always done, we will get to the point where we will be buying dairy products, fluid milk, and non-fluid milk from other countries, and that is food insecurity.
Budgets are always tight, but I know a lot of the commodity groups are looking at an increase in reference prices. They've got that ask coming into this farm bill. Is that doable?
I don't know yet. Honestly, I came out of healthcare and was a therapist and a manager, rehab services manager. And if I and my therapist team would ever walk into a patient's room without ever talking with the patient or their family and told them what we're going to do with them and to them, that was malpractice. You have to do a good assessment first and a good evaluation. And that's my commitment with the Farm Bill. Though we have a compressed time frame, we need to be listening to the American farmer, rancher, enforcer, the processor, key stakeholders, and then we'll determine what is needed. What's working, what's not working, what needs to be changed, and then we'll figure out the politics and the fiscal side of it.
The Environmental Working Group is going to be out this week with their latest farm subsidy database that they do. A little different the way they're doing it this year, but anyway, we've got a lot of large acreage producers we're from in the upper Midwest. How do you see that whole thing on payment limits in this next farm bill?
I think my philosophy has always been, because we've had a tax on in the past on, say, crop insurance and misguided amendments that want to limit by farm size or how the farms organize, which, quite frankly, there's a lot of families incorporate just to protect their personal assets, which we all understand that, right? The bigger the farm, I am not of that mindset, because the bigger the farm, the more the risk. And so I look rather when I look at proposals that limit based on the size, acreage, that kind of thing, I'm pretty skeptic about those. I've never seen anything that really makes sense.
Crop insurance, that's, again, another one of the priorities we hear from all the commodity groups. Do you see any tweaks that are going to be done in the crop insurance side?
I think there's questions that we need to ask right now. Obviously, I'm not to the point where I know what tweaks would it be. Number one, we need to protect it. It's so important. Crop insurance provides certainty. It's relatively timely. And the certainty isn't just for the farmer. It's for the lenders, right? I think many people are surprised at how much credit a farmer needs on an annual basis. And I think it is true. There are farms out there that borrow an amount of money in a given year more than the typical American family borrows in a lifetime, and because that's what it takes to finance the production, and the money comes in when the crops go to market. I think that there, one of the things we need to look at is are there lessons we can learn from the ad hoc disaster relief. Now, I'm glad that we have that, but it's not timely. And sometimes those checks are cut, the farmer's out of business, and certainly the lenders don't like it. And crop insurance is an absolute necessity to be able to get access to the credit that you need to farm.
How do you see the hearing process going? Will there be, you see field hearings as part of the discussion?
Oh, yeah. We kicked off the first one even before we were organized. Friday the 13th in January in Pennsylvania at the 107th Pennsylvania Farm Show. We had a nice mix, bipartisan group of members that came up for it. We had hundreds of people. They they ran out of finding chairs. We were in a big ballroom, and it was packed. And it was standing room, and he only standing room only in the back of that. We're going to be in doing a listening session. Yes, we're going to take it regionally around the country. I think the next one, I believe, on the schedule is in California at the World Agriculture Exposition. And then perhaps something in Texas. But my goal is to get these regional. I think that's really important. It kind of reflects the perpetual barnstorming tour of American agriculture I started 2 years ago after becoming a ranking member. You know, one of my first stops was in Minnesota, and sitting down everywhere I go, I sit down with, you know, farmers and ranchers and processors. Over the weekend, I was in Mississippi and Arkansas doing that, and I'll continue to do that. But it's more important, actually, to get the entire committee out so that Republicans and Democrats alike, you know, can hear from the voices of American agriculture.
You got a lot of work ahead of you. Appreciate the chance to visit.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.